Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Monday, February the 2nd, 2015. Here are our top stories.
Tonight, the FCC chairman calls for internet regulation. Then, McDonald's museum quality food. And how the border battle could cost DHS paychecks. That's next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Is this like Planet Idiot or something? I mean, I don't even know what to do anymore.
Well, today, new details emerged as to how Obama and the Department of Homeland Security have violated immigration laws and the economic consequence of those violations. National Review has the economic consequences. They report that the federal government has issued nearly 5.5 million work permits to foreign nationals since 2009. Now, this was a new report from the Center for Immigration Studies with government data that they've just obtained. Now, National Review points out yet again that the number of work permits, 5.5 million work permits given to law-breaking aliens, for the most part, explains how all net job growth since 2007 has come from foreign workers. But InfoWars breaks down the criminal aspects of this. This is a story from Kit Daniels. Obama criminally opens the border for a flood of illegals. He says that the feds gave 1.7 million work permits to aliens whose legal status is unknown, 1.2 million to aliens with visas that did not authorize employment, and nearly 1 million work permits to aliens who are known to have crossed the border illegally. Now, the spokesperson for the Center for Immigration Studies pointed out, this is a huge parallel immigration work authorization system that is outside the limits set by Congress. It inevitably impacts opportunities for U.S. workers. It damages the integrity of the immigration system, and it encourages illegal immigration. And they point out in this article, Kit does, it's not the only time that the Obama administration has enacted de facto amnesty. Last year, InfoWars discovered that the Border Patrol was purchasing bus tickets and travel vouchers for illegal aliens to ship them deeper into the United States at taxpayer expense. In other words, as they point out, this is 3.8 million of these are actually violations of the law, giving work permits to people who came here illegally. But of course, the Republicans are not going to do anything to impeach Obama for his illegal actions. Will they even shut down Homeland Security? We could hope so. But the best we're going to get from them is to use Homeland Security's budget to try to push Obama to doing the right thing. Good luck with that. Instead, he's pushing back, saying that the GOP wants to shut down Homeland Security. If only they didn't love it so much. In an article from the Daily Mail, they say Obama threatens stopping paychecks to 143,000 Homeland Security employees by the end of the month if Republicans don't give up the fight over amnesty for illegal immigrants. He warned that the GOP should not hold DHS funding hostage as they fight him on sweeping immigration policy changes that he made on his own. Yes, without legal basis. They say that the Republicans, of course, as we know, they funded the rest of the government pretty much through the continuing omnibus bill that they did right after they came back. But they only funded Homeland Security for a short period of time. Now what he's saying is that they really want to shut down Homeland Security. And he said that the Republicans said it would be no great loss if they did. Unfortunately, that's not what they did say. They point out, though, that the number of long-term unemployed has risen, as has the average duration of their joblessness. The number of Americans receiving food stamps is up, the rate of home ownership is down, and many others. They also point out further down the article, they say that although he points out the best job growth in manufacturing has happened the last couple of years since the 1990s, they say that's only true if you go back to January 2010. But there has been a net loss of manufacturing jobs during the president's administration. And it gets even worse. We have an article from Reuters pointing out that U.S. consumer spending in December is the weakest since 2009. They say U.S. consumer spending recorded its highest decline since late 2009 in December, with households saving the extra cash from cheaper gasoline. Other data on Monday showed that factory activity has cooled in January, suggesting that the economy may have entered this year on a slightly softer footing than has been expected. Now, it's not just that all the new jobs have gone to foreign workers. It's not just that we've had a loss of income, a loss of purchasing power. No, we're actually going to have a massive loss of wealth, too, if Obama gets his way. Americans for Tax Reform point out that he's looking to do a stealth increase and the death tax by changing the rate from 40% to nearly 60%. And here's how they calculate this. Right now, if someone were to die, they would calculate the inheritance on, let's say, a home at either the initial basis or the basis at the market value at the time the person dies. He's going to change it to the market basis at the time the person dies. Why is this a massive increase, and why is this going to really harm not only families, but small businesses and farmers? Well, because if you look back at the example they give, let's say that 40 years ago, Dad bought a house for $10,000, and today it's worth $120,000. Now, of course, they're going to tax you on $110,000 gain, saying that you made a profit. Is that really a profit? You've got a 40-year-old house. Did you really make $110,000 profit? No, this should be called the Federal Reserve Tax. What they are taxing you on is the amount of money that the federal government has devalued the currency on. That's essentially a depreciation in your purchasing power. Yet they will turn that into a tax in order to confiscate even more money from you after you die, from your family. And as we pointed out on today on InfoWars.com, they said there's some frightening honesty coming out of Congress. They say as we're running out of money, and Congress has just admitted that they're essentially broke, we'll talk about this resolution, but they point out in this article that they're going to come after those who aren't going to push back that hard. Of course, that's going to be the unborn, because they are the ones who are going to be paying back this massive debt that we're creating. They're also going to be going after those who have died with even more taxes. But here's what they said in the continuing resolution that is really pretty amazing. They go through and they say, basically, the federal government, this is from the House of Representatives, they pass this, they said the federal government is operating at an annual deficit. It's increasing its outstanding debt every year. Whereas we're now $18 trillion in debt, whereas we've borrowed 14 cents for every dollar we spent in 2014, whereas foreign governments, individuals, and corporations own 47% of that federal debt, whereas Social Security's unfunded liabilities in 2014 are over $10 trillion over the next 75 years and $25 trillion indefinitely. Look, that is a very, very low figure, especially when you look at the open-ended dependency as we bring people in from all over the world, not just from South America, Central America, from all over the world with our open borders and extend the welfare state to them. That's Cloward and Piven. So they go down this whole list of whereas. And what is the bottom line? Well, the bottom line with all their whereases, as they point out the many different ways that you can measure the bankruptcy of the federal government, they say, therefore, the federal government should not bail out state and local government employee pension plans and other post-employment benefit plans, and state and local government should immediately institute reforms. In other words, look out for yourselves, because we don't have your back. The thing about these unfunded pension plans at the state and local level is that they are unfunded. Where are we going to get the money? Things are going to get quite nasty, because all of this is going to be coming due in a very short period of time as the baby boomers retire and their pension promises don't have any money attached to them. Well, stay with us right after the break. We're going to talk about who owns the internet, or should anybody own it? And we're also going to ask, what do fast food French fries teach us about vaccines? Stay with us.
The knowledge of the ancients, tried and true, trusted herbs and extracts fused with the latest nutraceutical science. Introducing the all-new Ancient Defense Herbal Immunity Blend, crafted with over 14 key ancient herbs and extracts to supercharge and prepare your body for what experts admit is the most dangerous season of the year. We have rejected hundreds of other formulations in our quest to bring you what is simply the most powerful and comprehensive proprietary formula that we have ever created in the realm of herbal immunity. For the last 2 years, our team has been working with top doctors, nutritionists, and chemists to develop the ultimate nutraceutical formulation. Experience the benefits of combining over 14 ancient herbs and extracts with exciting new advances in nutraceutical science. For a limited time, get 25% off on this introduction. Offer. Visit AncientDefense.com or call 888-253-3139. AncientDefense.com. Every year we make resolutions to lose weight and get in shape. And the truth is, it's hard, even with diet and exercise, because of toxic food and our environment that is stressing our bodies more than ever before. Working with experts in nutrition and biochemistry, I found that super high-quality nutraceuticals, in addition to my diet and exercise, were the answers that synergistically worked. I could see the drastic changes every day with the amount of weight I've lost, my increased stamina, and more of a twinkle in my eye. That's why we are now so excited to launch the InfoWars Life Resolution Pack, combining three essential formulations: oxygen-based cleanser Oxy Powder, the Secret 12 bioavailable vitamin B12, and your choice of Super Female or Super Male Vitality. Now all available at a discounted price to you and your family to bring in the new year and make 2015 a true success. That's InfoWarsLife.com or 888-253-3139. 2015 is the year to do it, and it all starts at InfoWarsLife.com.
Well, a story on InfoWars.com from the Associated Press asks the question, who owns the Internet? Or who should own it? I don't think anyone should own it. But of course, the majority Democrats and the FCC want to not only control it, but tax it as well. They point out Tom Wheeler, chairman of the FCC, says that he's keeping the question in mind, who owns the Internet, as he pitches the biggest regulatory shakeup to the telecommunications industry since 1996. Actually, it's the largest regulatory shakeup, or we should say the largest takeover, since the inception of the Internet. This is going to subject the Internet to the control of a bureaucracy for the first time in its history. And what are they going to do with it? They're going to tax it, for one thing. But, of course, they're also going to be the gatekeepers. He says this, however, without any sense of irony. He says we need yardsticks in place to determine what is in the best interest of the consumers, as opposed as to what is in the best interest of the gatekeepers. Well, of course, the FCC wants to make itself the gatekeeper, not just the corporations. Understand that if you want net neutrality, and I would like to see net neutrality personally, but if you want that, you can handle that as a separate single issue. Congress could do something about it rather than turning this over to an unelected, unaccountable bureaucracy that will control all aspects of the Internet. That is simply a mask that they're using to get this done. So, of course, they run down the various aspects of this. They say, well, what are the options? And they give a couple of regulatory excuses saying, well, they could go back to the 1996 Telecommunications Act, or even better yet, we could go back to 1934 and use some regulatory fiction that actually was set up to apply to radio and telegraph. We could try to twist that into a control of the Internet. And that looks like that's what they're going to do. They're going to vote on this. They say February 26, Wheeler is expected to have the support of the two other Democrat commissioners. The two Republican commissioners have made it clear that they do not support applying Title II. That's the 1934 regulation. Republicans have pitched an idea that would enforce basic open Internet rules, but could strip the FCC of its ability to help local municipalities build their own broadband. Again, we don't need to have the FCC step in and take over all control of the FCC for either of those things, for either net neutrality or to increase bandwidth. But why do they want to increase bandwidth? Well, it's so that they can spy on you to a greater extent. They also point out then there's taxes. The Progressive Policy Institute has estimated that treating the Internet like phone service would trigger taxes and fees up to $15 billion a year. What does this mean for you individually? Well, that would be $67 for each wired service. In other words, whenever they bring it into your house, $67 for each of those occurrences. And then if you got a phone, a wireless phone, $72 each month for each of those devices. Hey, you got a couple of $100 sitting around the house that you don't need, right? You can play that each month for these new regulations. Listen, this is why we should really be concerned about the government when we see how they have lied and manipulated and tried to shut down the Internet in a variety of ways. And of course, using the FCC to try to do it from a regulatory standpoint is just one of three or four methods that they're going to try to use this year to exercise absolute control over the Internet. If we look at what they did to Barrett Brown, that should make us all very concerned about what the FCC and the government will do. Why should we want to turn it over to a government that would do what he's talking about what they did to him. And of course, for the first time, he is free to talk about this. He said one of the good things about having just been sentenced to 63 more months besides the time that he's served for things that really should not even be a crime. We'll talk about this in the article. The good thing about that is they finally have released the gag order that they put on him. He says, not long ago, I was a mild-mannered freelance journalist, activist, and satirist, but last Thursday, I was sentenced to 63 months in federal prison in a case that Reporters Without Borders has cited as a key factor in its reduction of America's press freedom rankings from 33 to 46. That's pretty far down. Now, the title of his article is My Post-Cyberpunk Indentured Servitude. Why did he call it that? Well, it turns out that not only is he getting another 5+ years in jail, but they have also ordered him to pay Stratfor $800,000, he says, which is to say that I will spend the rest of my life in a strange state of post-cyberpunk indentured servitude to an amoral private intelligence firm that is perhaps best known for having spied on Bhopal activists on behalf of Dow Chemical. Now, what did he do to harm them? He didn't break into their servers. He didn't steal any data from them. He wasn't a hacker. He was a reporter. When he saw the information that WikiLeaks had obtained from this, he said that he offered to arrange with the hackers to redact any of those communications that could, he said, potentially have endangered any foreign contacts if made public. And he said, because of this, that is why they're giving him the massive fine. Now, he also points out, as we have many times, that one of the charges that they brought against him, of course, was saying that he threatened the life of an FBI agent by tweeting, dead men can't leak stuff. Illegally shoot the son of a blank. He says, I'll admit this is clearly an outright call for murder, and it would certainly seem to warrant an FBI investigation. The problem is that it wasn't I who ordered this. It wasn't Barrett Brown, but rather Fox News commentator Bob Beckel, who said it on national television in the course of a no doubt productive discussion about WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. He had merely retweeted that. And then he goes on to say, and this is the last part of it, you really should read this entire article. He said, other matters that are just now coming to light, such as revelation 2 days before his sentencing, that the Department of Justice had withheld from his defense team sealed chat transcripts from the Jeremy Hammond hacking case, which contradicted its key claim that he was a co-conspirator in the Stratfor hack. And there's still other aspects of this, such as the FBI seizure of my copy of the Declaration of Independence as evidence of my criminal activity. He says, I blush to even commit it to print, lest I not be believed, even despite the fact that the FBI has now confirmed it. Well, welcome to the club, Barrett Browning. We constantly put things out that the FBI itself has admitted and confirmed that people don't believe. And of course, we have reported for many, many years how the government has labeled as domestic terrorists the founding fathers of our country, teaching this in seminars to law enforcement and to the military. And so, of course, it's not a surprise to us that they would confiscate Barrett Brown's Declaration of Independence and use it as evidence of his extremism, that they would twist things that they see on social media where he was merely quoting the real serious death threats, people calling for the government to assassinate Julian Assange, putting that out there and saying, you are trying to make a death threat against an FBI agent. That is why we should be very concerned about any more control of anything by the federal government, but especially about the internet, because right now the internet is the linchpin of our First Amendment free speech rights. Stay with us right after the break. We're going to talk about why French fries tell us a great deal about vaccines. We'll be right back.
Introducing Secret 12, the new InfoWars Life vitamin B12 formulation. Most forms of vitamin B12 are highly processed and synthetic and cannot be properly absorbed by the body. That's why for real results, so many are having to turn to painful B12 injections, which are known to have higher absorption rates. Now, InfoWarsLife.com is excited to announce that we can bring you our most bioactive, powerful form of B12 that has been developed with our exclusive perfected process. Secret 12 is a binary of nutraceutical-grade, bioavailable coenzyme forms of B12, methylcobalamin, the same kind used in B12 injections, and adenosylcobalamin. Secret 12 is simply taken by mouth, right on the tongue, and then swallowed. No needles, no injections. Don't take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Discover the secret. Secret 12. Secure your revolutionary Secret 12 formula right now at InfoWarsLife.com or call 888-253-3139. 2015 is almost here, and with it comes those New Year's resolutions to finally transform your body the way you want it. There's a reason over 88% of New Year's resolutions fail. Make this year different by equipping yourself with OxyPowder, the next level in cleansing the body naturally. Using super oxygenation, OxyPowder, available through InfoWarsLife.com, gently cleanses the body while you sleep with easy capsules. Tens of thousands of individuals have used OxyPowder to cleanse their bodies and aid in their transformations. Even InfoWars Nightly News Director Rob Dew has been using OxyPowder with incredible success.
Took it that first day, then I took it for six more days after that. 12 pounds melted off in about a week. I'd say a week, 7 days.
2015 can be different. Diet and exercise are important, but a lot of us have already tried that. OxyPowder flushes it out. Secure your OxyPowder at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com or 888-253-3139.
Well, McDonald's falling sales worldwide caused its CEO to lose his job last week, but McDonald's folded all of their McDonald's in Iceland back in 2009. Of course, it was a fallout from the economic crisis of 2008. The last burgers were sold on Halloween 2009, and one of those last burgers, the last cheeseburger and last bit of fries, was bought by someone and has been on display under a glass case ever since. And guess what? It looks brand new. Now, of course, we could always say that these fast food French fries are merely potatoes. But, of course, there was also an article last week about how the McDonald's French fries have 19 ingredients. Some of them, some pretty heavy chemicals, even things like silly putty. Now, let me tell you, if you've got a French fry that was cooked in some pretty disgusting oils and has silly putty and other preservatives types of things added to it, it's no longer just a potato. And what we can learn from this is that vaccines that have adjuvants like aluminum, that have preservatives like formaldehyde and mercury, are no longer just vaccines. That becomes an important part of the story. And yet, we see this continuing push to try to make vaccines mandatory, a demonizing of people who have concerns about the risks of vaccines, who believe that they're not being told the whole truth, and who know that these additives that are put into the vaccines have some very nasty consequences. We saw Obama just this last weekend on a review say, just get your vaccines. And listen to how the mainstream media reporter pushes the idea that we should have mandatory vaccinations.
Do you feel there should be a requirement that parents get their kids vaccinated? Are parents who aren't getting their kids vaccinated endangering others?
I understand that there are families that in some cases are concerned about the effect of vaccinations. The science is, you know, pretty indisputable. We've looked at this again and again.
Now, Obama says it's undisputed science. Let me tell you, there should never be anything such as undisputed science. Scientific facts as well as theories should always be tested. That's what we do in schools. We have children go back and reenact the experiments to prove simple things like gravity so they understand the scientific method, so that they're skeptical, so that they don't just take the word of somebody because they're a person in authority, because they're somebody with a degree, or even worse, because it's the government. Remember that Louis Pasteur had to fight against the undisputed facts of the day in terms of telling people that these diseases were caused by germs. He had to fight against the entire established community. He had to fight conventional scientific wisdom. The Wright brothers made advances where Langley did not, because Langley went with the charts that had been handed to him. He accepted those as undisputed facts of science. The Wright brothers instead went back and did their own measurements And based on that, they came up with a machine that could actually fly, even though Langley never got off the ground. But of course, even though Obama is saying that these are undisputed facts, he didn't say that a few years ago. When he was a senator who was running for president, he said, we've seen skyrocketing autism rates. Some people are suspicious that it's connected to the vaccines, this person included. This is Obama talking. He said, the science right now is inconclusive, but we have to research it. What has changed in the last few years? Well, I'll tell you what's changed. Obama's gotten a lot of corporate money. That's what's changed. Hillary Clinton said the same thing. She said in 2008 as a candidate, she says, I am committed to make investments to find the causes of autism, including possible environmental causes like vaccines. And of course, we've just seen Chris Christie come out and say, well, I think we should have a balanced approach when in the UK, they pushed him on, shouldn't you have mandatory vaccinations for all the children in the United States? He said, I think we should take a balanced approach. We should step back and take a look and understand that there are different diseases. There are different vaccines. We need to evaluate the risks of these different things. And he got a lot of fire. And so he now has come back and says, there's no question. Kids should be vaccinated. So I guess that means that Chris Christie on this issue, like so many others, is going to be absolutely indistinguishable from the establishment Republicans and Democrats. And of course, we have the CDC out there warning of a large outbreak of measles. Did you hear them warning about a large outbreak of Ebola? Did you see them acting very quickly to quarantine people? No, we didn't see that. Yet this is what they're saying at the CDC. They're saying that not having people vaccinated makes us vulnerable. And this is what the director of the CDC said. He said, what you do for your own kids doesn't just affect your family. It affects other families as well. The more kids who are not vaccinated, the more they put their neighbors' kids at risk as well. I'm sorry, I thought that the vaccine kept them from getting the disease. Think about that admission for a second. The CDC is saying that the kids who have had vaccines are at risk for getting the disease. They're admitting that it's not effective. Well, is it safe? No, not really. In a story on New American Today talking about how anti-vaccine parents are being blamed for the Mickey Mouse measles, they point out that an analysis of CDC data that you can find at vaxtruth.org, Don Pappel notes that prior to the introduction of the measles vaccine in the 1960s, only 0.015% of measles cases resulted in death. And the percentage of people who die globally from measles today is still very low at 0.00328%. Think about that. That means that you are 99.997% chance of not dying. Now, that's a pretty low risk. Contrast that to Ebola, where you had a 70 to 90% chance that you're going to die if you get that disease. A disease that they did not and still do not exactly know how it's transmitted because so many doctors and nurses are coming down with it, even though they are exercising all the precautions that are supposed to shut down its transmission. So you've got one disease that you have a 99.997% chance you're not going to die, and they're trying to push mandatory vaccines on people. And on the other hand, they step back and tell the public there's nothing to worry about with a disease that has a 90% fatality rate. Now, they point out that it's been known for a long time, and even before the vaccines, we had a tremendous drop in the number of people who died because it was known that cod liver oil could be used to give people supplementation of vitamin A, and that was very effective in terms of treating measles. And yet we see over and over, if you Google the measles vaccine, what you'll see is a story about Roald Dahl's, the author who wrote James and the Giant Peach and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He had a child who died from catching measles. It happens. It's very rare, but it happens. Nevertheless, they make that personal story that you can attach to because you know that author. That's what they use to try to get you to not look at what the actual risks are. That's the technique that's used over and over again. Again, going back to the New American article, they again quote vaxtruth.org saying that it's worth noting that in the 2011 measles outbreak in New York, where 88 people contracted measles, the ground zero patient was fully vaccinated, a 22-year-old woman. And of course, that's a very important point. In the MMR vaccines for measles, mumps, and rubella, they have a live but weakened version of all three of those diseases. That's what they're vaccinating children with, live, weakened versions of all three of those. So their immune system, their immature immune system, has to handle an invasion by three different diseases. That's why sometimes they get measles, and we don't know who patient zero is in this Mickey Mouse outbreak. But that hasn't stopped a frenetic call to mandate these vaccines. Look at the USA Today editorial from someone named Berezov. He says, "Your right to be sick ends where my right to be healthy begins." He doesn't want to hear any objections on the basis of civil rights. In a USA Today article, a contributor, Alex Berezov, says, "Your right to be sick ends where my right to be healthy begins." In other words, he has total contempt for any consent of what they might do to you. He compares unvaccinated persons to drunk drivers who, quote, pose an imminent danger to others, unquote. And he says jail time for parents who turn, quote, their children into little walking time bombs, unquote, is the only way to send a sufficiently strong message about the, quote, deadly consequences of failing to vaccinate children. Now, again, this is over the top. Not only do they not want to give us information, not only have they not given us any new studies after Obama and Hillary Clinton and other people have said, well, we need to look into the autism epidemic. What's behind that? Is it a factor, vaccines? Are they part of this? The adjuvants that are put in there, the aluminum or the preservatives, is that causing it? Is it the early and multiple vaccinations? They don't want to inform us about that. They don't want to look at it too closely, and they don't care if they get our consent. Now, just last summer, the New American also pointed out, as they referenced in this article, the many mandates that have been set up to force people to do what they don't want to do as far as a medical emergency. They point out that roughly 80% of the states across the nation have, since 2002, implemented, in varying degrees, the, quote, Model State Emergency Health Powers Act that was developed by a collaboration of government entities like the CDC and the UN World Health Organization. This grants tremendous powers to states at the expense of personal privacy and individual freedom. It allows forced involuntary quarantines and government-mandated vaccinations during officially declared emergencies. That's the problem. We can't get information, and they don't want our consent. And that's the big issue. It's fundamentally about civil liberties. Well, that's it for tonight's news. If you're watching on YouTube, please become a subscriber. And if you're not a subscriber to Prison Planet TV, please consider becoming a subscriber and supporting our operation. Of course, you'll be able to get the news not delayed by a day, but each night as it happens, 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, and you'll be able to share all those documentaries with your friends and neighbors that will help them to get the bigger picture, that will explain to them the background behind today's stories. Well, that's it for tonight. Join us again tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
In the past decade, we have witnessed unparalleled scientific discoveries in the area of health. But no one has put together a formula that focuses directly on brain health, nerve growth factors, and optimizing your cellular energy at the same time. DNA Force is one of the most expensive formulas to produce. Some of the ingredients in DNA Force are $12,000 a kilogram. We are using the coveted, patented, only American source of PQQ, CoQ10, and more. You want the best that's out there at the lowest price anywhere? Well, we're bringing you a total win-win. The ultimate value, cutting-edge, trailblazing game changer that also supports the InfoWar. We have produced a limited run of DNA Force, and it will take up to 12 weeks to produce more once we sell out. Secure your DNA Force today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll-free 888-253-3139. DNA Force from InfoWars Life.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.